This is Magmas Shukla Paksha Pratipad 2010, and we're celebrating Vyasa Puja. And Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna is telling Arjuna that I am speaking this knowledge to you because it got lost, nashed. Ivam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakalina mahata yoga nashta prantapa. Yoga nashta, this connection with God became broken. Yoga nashta means the connection, yoga, vidya, bhakti. So I have to speak this knowledge. So now in the Puran, in Adi Puran, there's a story. How did this knowledge get broken? Because it's always being passed down from the teachers are always existing, the students are always existing. The old teacher dies, the new student becomes the guru, then he gets old, and then his student becomes a guru. So as long as human beings are here, Ikshvaku, Manu, human society, that there should be knowledge and guru. So there's a story, as you would have guessed. There's a story behind everything. So Baladeva Vibhushan, in his purport in Gita, he explains about how this knowledge became broken. Once there was in India somewhere this rishi, famous rishi, Gautam Rishi. Maybe some of you are descendants of this illustrious Gautam Rishi. And he, in his country, around the valley where his ashram was, there was a severe drought. There was not any rainfall, so the crops were very less and food was a problem. Brahmins were not having any grains for yajna or food. So then Gautam Rishi, he did some pujas and he invited all the Brahmins, all the exalted Brahmins, come in to my ashram and stay with me and I will feed everyone. So he fed everyone and they stayed for some time. And then they wanted to go back to their villages and their areas. But what happened is that Gautam Rishi became very attached to those sages and rishis and Brahmins that were living in his ashram. This is a very nice example. He became attached to the association of these advanced Brahmins and Vaishnavas. He didn't want to give up their association. Although he's a married person, obviously, he has a gotra, so that means he has descendants, like Bhargava and Bharadwaj and Kapila and Kaushik and all these different great rishis. They had their wives and descendants, right? So the sages were thinking this, the sages and Brahmins were thinking, this is a problem. We want to go back and do our puja. But he wouldn't let them go. And they didn't, if they leave without his blessings, then it's an offense. As we have this phrase in India, when we're visiting a senior, we say, Prabhu, I'd like to beg your leave. I'd like to take your leave. That's very funny. Sounds very funny in English, but this comes out in English. I don't know what it is in Hindi, but we say, Prabhu, Papaji, or may I take your permission? I would like to leave. You know, there's this hierarchy of respect for other seniors, which is good, based on respect for God, who is the supreme senior of everyone. Brahmins wanted to take his blessings before they left. They didn't want to say, well, later, Rishi Baba, we're out of here. Gone, we're gone. So they said, please, can we have your blessings? He said, no, please don't go. So they stayed 1 week, 2 weeks, so many weeks. And finally they were thinking, well, what about my wife and kids? The Brahmins thought, we have to do something to get out of here. So then what they did is the Brahmins, they created a false cow. And then the cow was wandering there. So sages, devotees, they like to honor the cow. Namo Brahmanya Devaya. Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo. So they, as Krishna does and does, they like to scratch the behind the ears of the cow or under the neck and make the cow happy. So the cow is happy, the devas are happy. The devas are happy, Gopal's happy. If Gopal's happy, everybody's happy. So they honor thy mother. As they have the Mother's Day. Every year they have Mother's Day, Father's Day. But then they eat every day the other mother. So we should honor the cow mother. We have Mother's Day, but what about Gomata Day? Gomata Ki.
Jai!
So the Brahmins created this false cow and was wandering there. So Gautam Rishi went up and he petted the cow, went to touch the cow. As soon as he touched the cow, it died. And the Brahmin said, oh, Gohatya, we cannot stay here. Oh, Prabhu, look, Gautam Rishi's killed the cow. Oh, Oh, Rishi Maharaj, I'm sorry. We're aghast. We're horrified. We came here as your honored guests, and you treated us so nicely. Now, in front of our eyes, you killed a cow. And they left. Gotam Rishi is not so slow. He said, what is this? I have thousands of cows in my goshala. I'm petting them every day. And they're liking it, and I'm liking it. This is something, some funny business going on here, as we say in America. There's some funny business. So then he thought, and he looked, and when that cow that he had touched and died, there was nothing there. It was by tantra, magic. So then he said, oh, you think you're so smart? Okay, watch me now. So then he took one hair, and he threw it on the ground. He said, I curse all you Brahmins to forget all your knowledge. Vidya nasht, yoga nasht, lose your connection with vidya. And they did. So this is a story of how this knowledge had to come into this earth planet again. Because this story was there that was lost, and then Krishna brought it back by giving to Arjuna. Baladeva Dipusha gives this tika. I put different points, and it's kind of a medley of different points all around Vyasa Puja and what this day is all about. There are many great gurus and great acharyas, and there's Brahma. There's different sampradaya headed by Brahma, the sampradaya headed by Lakshmi, and then the Kumaras, then who? Rudra, the force. But why is only one day in the whole year? Only one day is set aside for worshiping guru. And the guru that's being worshipped on that day is Vyasadeva. Why don't they have Brahma Puja Day? Rudra Puja Day. Why Vyasadeva? Vyasadeva doesn't really have even a specific sampradaya. So that means there's something special about Vyas, the speciality of Vyasadeva, that distinguishes him from everyone, even Brahma. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes that point, and others. First of all, so we want to understand what is it that makes Vyasadeva so special that he is worshipped? He's specifically worshipped on Guru Purnima, which is maybe Jaist month. I think it's Jaist Purnima. We call him Guru Purnima because that's the appearance day of Vyasadeva. That's his birthday. And then in some traditions, they worship the Guru on his appearance day as a representative of that Vyasadeva. But Vyasadeva, we should understand something about his distinction because we're honoring Vyas on Vyasa Puja, the representative of Vyas, who's brought something special. First of all, it says that he's Shakti Veshavatar. That means he's been invested with a particular potency or power by the Lord. And the Lord has different Shaktis, as you know, Ladini Shakti, Samvit, Sandini. Well, he has the Gyan Shakti, knowledge potency. And Lord Chaitanya, you see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami in Sanatana Shiksha, he's mentioning the unique position of Vyasadeva so we can appreciate Vyasadeva, his identity and his contribution. He says, this is from Sanatana Shiksha, chapter 20 of Madhya Lila, verse 353. Sarvagya Munira Vakya Shastra Paraman Amasava Jivera Haya Shastra Dwara Gyan. O Sanatan, the Vedic literature composed by the omniscient Mahamuni Vyasadeva are evidence of all spiritual existence. Only through these revealed scriptures can all conditioned souls attain knowledge. Sarvagya Muni Vakya Shastra Paraman Amasava Jivira Hai Shastra Dwara Gyan. Shastra Dwara. So this is the porthole. The books and the literatures written by Vyasadeva, they're the porthole, they're the view. You can see from them, through what Vyasadeva has given, we can see all the Vedic literature. So this is a very exalted title that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving of Mahamuni. He's saying, first of all, he's saying, Mahamuni Vyas. He is Sarvagya. Sarvagya is one of the words used to describe Bhagavan. Sarvagya. We say in English, omniscient. omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. God is everywhere. God is all-knowing. Omniscient means God is all-knowing. Krishna is Bhagavan Sarvagya. And Bhagavan himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is Sri Krishna. Nahayanya. He's saying that Vyasadeva, he is Sarvagya. He's Sarvagya Muni. He's not an ordinary Muni. Shivji is also a Muni. Brahma is also a Muni, a Rishi. They're nothing but that. He's saying Sarvagya Muni. He's a very, very special Muni because Vyasadeva, he has come into this world to give the supreme Bhagavad Tattva, supreme knowledge of Krishna, of God. And all the other Vedas, which were compiled by different Rishis and different Munis, Parasara Muni and Jaimini Rishi, so many Munis and Rishis, all kinds of Karmakanda Shastras, Gyanakanda, many, many subjects for improvement of life. Vyasadeva, his specific contribution is Vedanta Sutra and Srimad Bhagavatam. He collected everything else. Like you may be a musician, so you collect the best songs from the 10 different musicians, the most popular songs of the year 2009. And then you put one of your songs also. So there's an anthology. Oh, there's 9 great recording artists, and there's also your song. So the song of Vyasadeva is the best. Because he's Sarvagya, all knowledge. He has condensed the entire body of Vedic knowledge in Vedanta Sutra. He's like a zip drive. He took all the Vedas and he zipped them up. Because sages are wandering here and there, and they can't carry around 18 volumes of the Bhagavatam, or they can't carry around a bunch of books. So they carry around just mantras. Just like if you have one of those debit cards. It's a little tiny debit card. You put it in a thing and you get so much money flies out of them. The box. Or you have some code number. If you have some code number, you open a whole computer and all the programs, but if you don't have that code, you can't open it. It's what you call password. Vedanta Sutra is like password to unlimited knowledge. He did that for the higher classes, for the Brahmins, Rishis and sages, who are Shastra Vidvan. They're very intelligent. So they can remember the password. Other people have to write it on the back of their hand or something. Or write it inside their shirt, on the tail of their shirt or something. So therefore the masses, he said, okay, Vedanta Sutra, this is codified. The sages and rishis, they can read one sutra, Tattvamasi. That's one, or Janmad Yasya Yataha. And then they can understand, they can unravel it and understand it and enter into it and derive some realization, because I packed it all inside. They can unzip it. Like you make a file condensed, then you can open it up, as you know. Then he thought, well, what about all the people that aren't so smart, so intelligent? And then he compiled the Bhagavad Puran. So the Bhagavatam is the essence of all knowledge because it presents more than the Vedanta Sutra. Because he did the Vedanta Sutra, and he actually, according to the commentators, they said he gave one rendition. He wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, but he wasn't satisfied. That's why he says when he rewrote, there's some Sanskrit words that say when he sat to rewrite the Bhagavatam. So there's 2 sittings for Bhagavatam. He wrote the Bhagavatam one time. I discussed this once class before. And there was something missing in it. And he was unhappy. He met his guru, Narada Muni. Narada Muni said, you've created a robot. No robot. It looks like a body. It does things, but there's no heart. So you've explained about Braj and different things, but you haven't presented the heart of Braj. You haven't presented the heart of Vrindavan. The heart of Vrindavan is Srimati Radharani. Her love, her bhav, her mahabhav. So then he sat down and he wrote the Bhagavatam and you can say fluffed it out, or he brought out the actual heart of Radharani and expanded the different rasa. So then it became perfect. So therefore, Vyasadeva's contribution is so great that he is given this Bhagavatam, which can bring one to the highest platform of Krishna Prema. And no other Vedic literature can do that. So therefore, we worship him on Guru Purnima, especially a worship of Vyasadeva or the Guru Parampara. And then we see our Srila Prabhupada, that he took this idea of Bhagavatam as his life and soul. Although not initially, when he first started his translation and distribution, he was writing serial commentaries, verse by verse, on Chaitanya Charitamrita and also Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And then he published Easy Journey to Other Planets. And someone said, Swamiji, if you want to start a mission, your League of Devotees or some preaching mission, it should be based on the Bhagavatam. Someone suggested, the Bhagavatam is the paramount scripture. So then, with that advice, a recommendation of whoever that was, Vyasadeva disguised as a friendly advisor, because the demigods and these great sages, they can come in any form they want. The demons living with Kamsa and Mathura, if a human being can turn into a duck, if a human being can turn into a snake, then they're just, they're demons. They're not predominated by Sattvagun, mostly Rajasic, and they learn some Rajasic Vidya of Tantra, whatever, transform their Kalevaram, their Rupam. Certainly Vyasadeva. He's invisible to most everyone. But when Madhvacharya went there 1,200 years ago, he saw him. And he presented his Bhagavad Gita, and they conversed together in Vyasgupa. He's there. He's a Chiranjeev, Vyasadeva. Maybe it was Vyasadeva that appeared to Prabhupada. At any rate, it doesn't matter. It was done. And Prabhupada made the Bhagavatam his life and soul. So that's how we are all gathered. We're all unified and gathered here today because Vyasadeva is acting through this preceptorial line, Guru Parampara. Evam Parampara Prabhupada. This knowledge is coming. This Bhagavat Tattva, this Bhagavat knowledge, Vyasadeva brought it into this world. No other rishi brought this knowledge into this world. No other rishi delivered this secret of knowledge of Vrindavan. It's not there. Vishnu Prana is there. Padma Prana is there. And these are collections from different rishis and sages and different conversations. They're compiled by Vyasadeva. Vishnu Prana has Krishna Leela, Vrindavan Leela. So does Padma Prana. But it's like dry. There's something missing. Otherwise, what's the need? Why tell the same pastimes again in the Bhagavad Purana? We already have all these pastimes are in Garga Samhita. They're in Harivansa Puran. They're in many, many books, especially Skanda Puran, Padma Puran, Adi Varaha Puran, many pastimes. But Radharani's missing. That great jewel, that great gem, that private domain. And this is all the arrangement, because the Lord knows the past, present, and future. He knew that that Radha and Krishna were going to come again. Vyasadeva didn't. Or maybe he did, who knows? There's actually a verse. There's one verse about Vyasadeva. This is in the Padma Puran. And it's from Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami. He's glorifying. It's on the folio, you can see. And he says that, okay, he's Shakti Vesha Avatar. He has Gyan Shakti that gives this highest knowledge of Bhagavat Tattva. Ultimately, the Prem, Vraja Prem, is giving it. And in this verse, I just wrote the English. This is, I don't know who's speaking, but this is in Padma Puran. Jiva Goswami quotes this to establish the position of Vyasadeva's unique position of authority. He says, Lord Brahma, the demigods, they don't know everything. But Vyasadeva does. Brahma has four heads, our Brahma. Some universes, Brahma has eight heads. But in the Padma Purana, it's saying that he doesn't know, but Vyasadeva knows everything. And then it goes on to say that other rishis, they simply borrow ideas from Vyasadeva. They borrow some ideas from him, and then they just expand it, and then they give it a name like Jaimini Sutras or whatever. They give some name to it. And he gives the analogy is given there in that verse. From the Padma Purana, other rishis, they borrow all their ideas from Vyasadeva, just as people pick up some discarded items from someone's home. Very interesting. You have some in America and West, people have so much affluence, so they get an old couch, they buy a new couch for the living room, so then they take the old couch and put it on the street. They discard it, they throw it, they basically throw it, although it's quite good. Some guy comes along with a pickup truck, hey, look at that couch. And they pick it up and put it in. So the sum total of knowledge produced by other rishis and collected by other rishis is just some discarded house articles from the storehouse of Vyasadeva. This is told, and Jiva Goswami quotes this. Quite unusual. This is the position. And I mentioned that Srila Prabhupada's role as a representative of Vyasadeva. Of course, we can see that Prabhupada has pushed the message of Vyasadeva around the world more than anyone. There are many, many great gurus traveling and preaching, and all credit to them, because a lot of other sampradayas, they say, oh, you're just all excited about your guru's greatness, but our guru is so great. And okay, fine. Our guru only went so many times around the world. Your guru went 29 times. Our guru only went 13 times. Okay, there's all big and small, but there's one thing that distinguishes Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam. Ki Jai. Prabhupada, it's interesting because there are other great Gaudiya Vaishnava gurus coming in different sampradayas, without mentioning even sister organizations, etc. But do you know something very interesting? Only in the international society is there a daily Srimad Bhagavatam class required from day one. Nowhere at Radhakund, nowhere at Govindakund, nowhere in any other GM or XYZ or this, that. They sing bhajans in the morning, Bengali bhajans, and then jap karo, sleep karo, whatever karo. Nashta prayeshu badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavad yuktama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. This is Prabhupada's faith. It's something special. It's the only religious, spiritual Gaudiya Vaishnava religious institution. Daily Bhagavatam class required to such an extent that if you don't know Bhagavatam, no breakfast. It's B&B. No Bhagavatam, no breakfast. So this means something, that Prabhupada, he's something special, that he wanted to propagate this message of Vyasadeva. Because where do we find Krishna left this planet 5,000 years ago? But where did he... Krishne Sudha Mo Pagate Dharma Ginana Bisaha. Krishna Sudha Upagate. Upagate means he left. He left to his own dham, Krishna Sudha. Upagate. Dharma Ginasibi. You know, Gyan and Dharma together, somehow, where do you find them? It's Puran Arka Dunoditaha. Puran Arko Dunoditaha. Kalodrisho Nashta. He said, people in Kali Yuga, their drishti. The drishti, the vision, the understanding of people in Kali Yuga is nashed. They're blind. People don't know. It's like, it's all dark. Kalodrisho. Kalodrisho is black darkness. What can you see in the dark? Guaranamavasya night in the forest. You can't even see your nose in front of you. It's so dark. Klodrisha. Nashta. So all knowledge. Puran arko dunoditaha. So Puran, ark means sun. This Bhagavat Puran is as brilliant as the sun. It has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by knowledge and religion, dharma. And the people of this age of Kali can get great light by studying this Bhagavat Puran. Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai!
The Bhagavatam is the personification of Srila Vyasadeva. The Bhagavatam is the personification of Srila Vyasadeva's mercy. And Srila Prabhupada, our Gurudev, he has given Vyasadeva in everybody's living room millions of Bhagavatams. Personally, we distributed 90,000 Bhagavatams. By the mercy of Prabhupada. 6 years distribution. And 60,000 small books. But Prabhupada's mercy is very big. So then big things come from Prabhupada's disciples. This is something substantial to consider. Prabhupada's dedication to the Bhagavatam. Who in this world is going to take rest at 11 o'clock and get up at 1 o'clock? For anything. What is, you go, say you take rest at 11 o'clock. At 11:30, you get a phone call from one of your girlfriends or something. She says, oh, I really want to meet you. You'll say what? Forget it. I'm going to sleep. I mean, there's nothing attractive that's going to, can you imagine taking rest at 11 o'clock night and rising at 1 o'clock without fail after 3 hours? You're just getting into it and rising up all by yourself. The whole world is sleeping. Then speaking to Bhagavatam. Prahlad Uvacha, Matir na Krishne parato satova mito vipadyeti griha vartanam adanta gopir vishitam damishram punak punak charvata charvananam. In this verse, Prahlad Maharaj is explaining the unfortunate nature of the conditioned souls in this age of Kali. They're being misled by the scientists. And like this, the Prabhupada is speaking the Bhagavatam philosophy for everyone's benefit. So therefore, any representative of Vyasadeva, any representative of Srila Prabhupada, they can't help but live, think, breathe, distribute Bhagavatam. What are we? We're Bhagavat. We worship Bhagavan. Does he have any special book? Yes, he has the Bhagavat. And we're called Bhagavat Bhaktis, isn't it? We don't say Ishvara. We could say Ishvara Bhaktis, but we don't. We could say Vishnu Bhaktis, but we don't. We could say Krishna Bhaktis, and we do. And we can. And we definitely say we're Radha Bhaktis. Radha Rani Ki! Bhagavat Bhaktis. We're devotees of Bhagavan. What Bhagavan? Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Ki Jai. Ananda Kanda Bhagavan Ki Jai. And Radharani is revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada wanted us all to become pure devotees of Radharani. What is the way? Study Bhagavatam. Venu Geet, Gopi Geet, Pranaya Geet, Yugal Geet, Brahmar Geet, Viraha Geet. Prabhupada's contribution, his role as a representative of Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva's greatest contribution is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So who pushed the mission of Vyasadeva to spread Vedic knowledge the most throughout the world? Even everyone recognizes this, but people don't know about infighting or my guru, your guru, like professors and objective people, newspapers, reporters, they say, well, one thing for sure is Bhaktivedanta and his Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, they have distributed, without a doubt, nobody can argue this point, more books of Vedic knowledge, and especially Bhagavatam, than all the other groups combined. Although they're doing wonderful work, but these are facts, and that's empowerment. Prabhupada was Shaktivesh Avatar also. His guru by Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev Goswami. He gave this appellation to Srila Prabhupada. He said that your Gurudev, he is Shaktivesh Avatar. What Shakti? Nityananda Shakti. Nityananda ki jai. He's Nityananda because Vyasadeva is Gyan Shakti. Shaktivesh, Gyan. Bhagavad Gyan, specifically Bhagavad Gyan, not Ayurveda Gyan or economics Gyan or B-commerce Gyan. Paravidya, Bhagavad Gyan, spiritual knowledge, wisdom. And Prabhupada, of course, he was that. But we don't see Vyasadeva going to the East Village. We don't see Vyasadeva going to Mumbai. He's in the Himalayas, keeping cool. But Prabhupada, he went everywhere to give the Bhagavad knowledge. To give Vyasadeva's mercy everywhere. East Village. So he spread the mission of Vyasadeva the most. And in a special way, like Nityananda. So he's Nityananda Shakti. All that karuna, all that compassion and mercy and knowledge. Nityananda is Balaram, Guru Tattva. Well, this is very glorious. He's Nityananda Shakti. This special Shakti. And Nityananda means Sandini. Nityananda means Balaram. Sandini means establishment. Establish someone on the right path, the path of knowledge, the path of spiritual improvement. The Prabhupada went around everywhere as Nityananda's mercy, potency, Nityananda Shakti, to establish everyone in spiritual life by giving them Bhagavat Tattva, Bhagavat Gyan. So there's Srimad Bhagavatam. But there's something special about Nityananda. He's not only Guru Tattva, he's not only compassionate to the Jagais and Madais like us, so compassionate, risking his own life, sacrificing his own blood, literally. I sometimes use that figuratively. Oh, I sacrifice my blood for preaching. But literally sacrifice his blood to liberate Jagai and Madai. But there's something special about Nityananda. Nityananda is Balaram, and Balaram's expansion in Madhurya is Ananga Manjari. So Ananga Manjari is that loving aspect. So Prabhupada brought that love. He brought the love of Ananga Manjari. Cupidity. Ananga means cupidity. The transcendental Cupid, transcendental Kamadev, Sri Krishna. Nityananda, that's the speciality that he was conquering everyone with his love. Bhajagauranga, Kahagauranga, Lohagauranga, Namare. Prabhupada represents Vyasadeva in that regard. It's the meaning of Vyasad Puja. Well, Vyasad Puja is the one day of the year to celebrate the birthday of the spiritual master as a representative of Vyasadeva, delivering transcendental knowledge unchanged as given in the Bhagavatam. So this is very interesting, that the guru is receiving worship. Very nice concept. Upward worship, downward mercy. Puja goes up, worship goes up, and mercy comes down. On this day, we direct our puja to guru. And he doesn't take it for himself. He offers it to his guru. He offers his guru. Then it goes to the original Adi Guru Vyasadeva. At least for us, because he's giving Bhagavad knowledge in this material world. Narada Muni's preaching in the devas and hell and everywhere. Narada Muni's going. But Bhagavad knowledge entered into this world through the mercy of Vyasadeva, disciple of Narada. So that he's representing that Bhagavad knowledge, which is what we have received. So our gurus are speaking on behalf of Vyasadeva. They're receiving the puja and offering it upward to Vyasadeva. It's Vyasa puja. We don't even say guru puja. We're worshiping a guru as a representative of Vyasadeva. And he's accepting the worship and directing it to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva being pleased with the submission and dedication, sincerity of the worshippers, then he sends the mercy down. It comes down. The analogy that is given in Sandarbha is like the viceroy. When India was ruled by the British Raj, King George V. He had these viceroys. Viceroy. Roy means like king. So he's like vice president. They were representing the king, King George in England, and they would go to Lucknow, or they would travel here and there, visit someplace in India, and they were worshipped tremendously by the different kings, and the Bihar kings and Bengal kings. The kings would come and give them so much gold, and they would give them so much land and so many things to the viceroy as a representative of the king. But the British law was that everything the viceroy collects in worship or gifts or charity or contribution has to be noted. There was one minister, an accountant, traveling with him, be noted, and was all actually sent to King George. Was offered to King George. They didn't pocket it. So they were accepting the lavish contributions and donations as a viceroy on behalf of the king. So this is the analogy that the guru representing the king, or you can say the emperor of Vedic knowledge, Vyasadeva, he's accepting whatever puja and he's offering it back. When he keeps any for himself, then he gets arrested. It's unlawful. He gives it back. This is one point. So all of our honor and our feelings of gratitude we offer to the spiritual master on this particular day. I mean, every day there's some type of guru puja. Before any other puja, we have to worship guru. Some panchupachara in the mind. Pushpam, we offer flowers. We can offer mental flowers. Or some ganda. Heshaganda, I'm Guru Vedama. Iram pusham, I'm Guru Vedama. Iram anavyanjana mishna. We offer some food. We offer some deep. Some puja, guru puja. Some form of mental or external puja we have to offer to guru before that Krishna will accept any offering. He won't even accept any offering without worshipping guru first. So this is the supremacy and the position of guru, how important and significant his role is. So we receive this mercy comes down by this proper worship and puja. This is the process, the whole parampara. Sincere souls worship the spiritual master and Krishna, and they receive mercy in return. It flows down. The spiritual master receives your offerings and respects, and he offers them to Krishna through the chain of the disciplic succession. The worship is being directed upwards, and the flow of mercy is coming downwards. There's interesting Narada Bhakti Sutra. It says here that, what is the meaning of bhakti? One sutra says, bhakti means puja and anurag. Think of this. Bhakti, devotion, means puja and anurag. Means worship and attachment. refers to worship performed with sincere love and great attachment. This is bhakti. A sincere devotee, his practices or his devotion is never mechanical, but is offered with anurag, which means strong feelings of attachment for the Lord or his devotees. True worship of the Guru or of Krishna is performed with our mind, our senses, and our bodily limbs, not just some external thing. So this is the meaning of Vyasa Puja. One Acharya says that this verse from Narada Bhakti Sutras, he said this is the meaning of Vyasa Puja. Vyasa Puja is the time when we express puja and anurag. We worship the spiritual master with great attachment, with strong feelings of appreciation and gratitude. This is very interesting. How do we get knowledge? Do we get knowledge by reading a book? Now, we say in spiritual circles, knowledge through submission. Very interesting. Generally in India they have the principle, knowledge through bribing. You pay the professor, you get the paper. Hey, do you have the paper? Yeah, how much? Hey, 5,000. Okay, you've heard this idea. True knowledge comes through submission to the teacher. This is the recognized principle in India from time immemorial. If you want to learn any subject, you must go through the teacher. You want to learn sitar, what do? You go to Benares, you surrender to a sitar teacher, you stay with him for 8 years, and you learn sitar, isn't it? You want to learn Ayurveda. You go to some Vaidya, and you study with him, you learn Vaidya. You want to learn Jyotish. You get a book on Jyotish. Will you become a Jyotish? No. You have to surrender to someone, and they will teach you. So Jiva Goswami, he was surrendered to Rupa Goswami and serving him at Sevakunj, preparing his manuscripts and so many things. And Rupa Goswami blessed him. And he went on to write Sundarvas and so many wonderful things by the blessings of Rupa Goswami. So this Vedic knowledge is not secret. Vedic knowledge is not secret. Vedic knowledge, you can open a book and find all this Vedic knowledge. But real knowledge flows to the student, not through the words, but through consciousness. This is a very important point. Real knowledge is all the, hey, I don't need a guru, I don't need it. I just open the books, I just study Bhagavad Gita, I learned so many shlokas, I went, you know, X, Y, Z. You know, I learned so many things. And it's also good. And not, because that's also teachers there. But the more submissive one is to the same principle applies, not that, because that's also the same. You're submitting to a teacher. Don't get me wrong. But that's important, that you're actually submitting to the teacher, then the flow will come. Tavati pranipatena, pariprashnena sevya. Krishna himself says, Krishna is telling, how do you get knowledge? Pranipatena means you lie like a stick in front of the teacher. Who's prepared to do that? Nobody. Why? Because of E, G, O. Everybody's governing organization. Everyone's governed by their ego. So knowledge, it's a communion of consciousness. Knowledge comes by a communion of consciousness. The shishya's consciousness communes with the guru's consciousness. So the knowledge, it flows to the student not through the words, but through the communion of consciousness. Just as water flows down a hill, knowledge naturally flows to the student who is R-E-S, res, receptive, eager, and submissive. As water flows to the sea, flows down the mountain, it's natural, the ordinary course. Transcendental knowledge flows to the student naturally if there's some qualification of the shishya. Because consciousness is a manifestation of spiritual existence. Consciousness is as real. Consciousness is as real as earth and water. And consciousness has its own laws and its own creations. Now I'm going to speak some points about consciousness. They say in the Gita, it says consciousness is the energy of the soul. What is consciousness? Frontiers of consciousness. Psychology magazines have articles like that. Psychology Today, the frontier of consciousness. Consciousness is dynamic. Consciousness is focused by the intelligence. Consciousness interacts with and influences matter. Because our soul is emanating the energy of consciousness, which is interacting with this material body, right? And it's influencing it. When your consciousness changes, then the interactions with your material body also change. Consciousness interacts with other conscious living entities. Now, this is a very important one. Consciousness acts beyond time and space. So if one is having communion with the consciousness of his guru, and the guru is in samadhi, niti lila, no problem. The knowledge can flow. One who is tadatmika with Rupa Goswami or Vishnath Chakravarti or Naratam, they can receive knowledge, sakshat, darshan, tattva darshan, sakshat, later. This is the point. It acts beyond space and time. Consciousness reacts personally and responds personally. Consciousness thrives on humility. Thrive means grows, lives, and breathes. Consciousness thrives on humility and selfless devotion. Consciousness manifests perfect qualities when serving the Supreme Consciousness, or God, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, who is full of perfect qualities. So someone's wearing a sari, or the dope, what they call it, the chunari, or whatever, the chunari, and written on that sari are the 26 qualities of devotee. So when one is, his consciousness is fully absorbed in serving Bhagavan Sri Krishna, then they will manifest all the perfect qualities. What is knowledge? In the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, vidya, or knowledge, is equated with bhakti, devotion and worship, rather than intellectual discipline. That's why professors around the world, they study Indology, they study Sanskrit, they study Bengali, they study Indian religious literature, and they miss the point. They miss it. They never actually take up Bhagavad Dharma. They never engage in sadhana. It's all external. They think it's an intellectual pursuit. They don't submit to guru. But this knowledge of Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, this is equated with bhakti, with devotion and worship, rather than intellectual discipline. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, verse 2? Guhyam. Vidya means knowledge. Raj means king. Everyone knows that. Rajavigyam. This knowledge, Arjuna, that I'm telling you, is sarva guhyattamam. Finally, it's guhya, guhyatara, guhyatam, it's guhya, then it's guhyatara, then it's guhyatam, then it's sarva guhyattamam. This Krishna gives a progression. And Gita, the secret of secret, secret. And it's only available by communion of consciousness. From guru to disciple. And it's very extraordinary. So this is Vedanta, the Vedas and the Bhagavad Tattva. This is Guhyam, the secret. This science, that's what Krishna is saying. This Guhyam is a secret. You can't get it by having a PhD in Sanskrit. You can't get it by pedantic study or intellectualism. You can only get it by submission, by eagerness and submission to Guru, pranipatena. Because you have to submit your consciousness to the consciousness of the Guru. And this is the formula. Devotional service, so therefore, as Krishna is saying, Rajavidya, he's saying this knowledge, and what is the knowledge that Krishna is giving in the Gita? Devotional service. Bhakti Yoga. He says, this is the greatest secret. This is the king of all knowledge. There's no higher knowledge than this. Well, what's your degree? BCom, PhD, this, that, dot, 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 this, that. So many degrees. But this is vidya. It's all vidya. It's not paravidya. Paravidya is transcendental. There's a lokik jnana. This is the Gita. So this is the confidential knowledge. So the process of devotional service or bhakti vidya is the science of directing the consciousness to its natural perfection. The process of devotional service or bhakti. Bhakti means real knowledge. We already defined Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. And Krishna explains, what is the most secret knowledge? What is the king of all knowledge? What does Krishna say? Bhakti. Manmana, bhavamad bhakto, Madhyaji mam namaskaru. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me. Offer your obeisance unto me. This is knowledge. Krishna is giving knowledge to Arjuna. Bhakti Vidya. This is Paravidya. So this is the topmost knowledge. This is very nice. Listen to this point again. The process of bhakti is, this is Vidya. The process of bhakti is the science for directing consciousness to its natural perfection. The natural perfection of consciousness is prema, ecstatic love of God. So now, what is this process of bhakti? Bhakti is learned through conscious reception, a flow of mercy from the guru, after one accepts him as authority. If one does not accept the guru's authority, the mercy will not flow. If one thinks, I know more than guru, or anything, if he doesn't submit to the authority that guru knows Krishna, guru has Krishna, and if I want to receive him, Krishna, or this knowledge of bhakti, you have to surrender to the guru. There's no other way. Krishna's telling. This is the whole point. It's learned through conscious reception. It's a flow of mercy from the guru after one accepts him as authority. The scriptures say there's no other way. The word guru means heavy. Everyone knows that. It's Hindi. Guru. But also the word guru means important. Maybe you didn't know that. Or something. Sometimes we say, well, this is a heavy point. Or whatever. So heavy also means something important. So guru means important. So the disciple must regard the guru as essential for his progress. The perfect example is Srila Prabhupada, of how much importance he stressed in his guru, in his guru's order, and his guru's seva. Guru means heavy, all right, but he means important. There's nothing more important to me in my life than my guru. Who can say that? Who can really say that? Very few. What's important in my life is my wife, my husband, my kids, my money, my house, my happiness, my health. I mean, honest, to be honest. I'm not, don't feel bad about it. It takes lifetimes that if everything else disappears, but I have my guru, then I have everything. If this whole world disappears, it doesn't matter. If I have Guru Sambandha, then I have everything. But when will we realize that? Like every disciple has some order of his guru, which he's making his life and soul. I have some 2-3 orders that I'm making my life and soul. And this is the most important thing to me. That's why when something comes to disturb, one of the things is writing. There's one order Prabhupada says in the first canto, he said, those who have taken the renounced order of life, their first duty is to produce some literature for the benefit of humanity at large. Prabhupada is an example of that, that he took his words of his spiritual masters, life and soul. So to comprehend the meaning of guru, we must daily worship the guru before we worship the Supreme Lord. That's told in the deity worship book anyway. But then, one day a year is specially set aside so we do to strengthen the bond of the disciple and the guru. We must worship him more elaborately on his appearance day. And this particular worship is called Vyasa Puja. It commemorates we're worshiping the guru because he has come to deliver fallen souls. Our line of Bhagavad knowledge, as I mentioned, starts with Vyasadeva, who wrote the Bhagavatam, and he has made the totality of Vedic knowledge and Bhagavad Tattva available. I discuss all these things. But books are not enough, because as we said before, knowledge is not carried by words, but by consciousness. This is a very important statement. Transcendental knowledge is not conveyed and not carried by words, but by consciousness. Otherwise, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna would say, just buy my book and read it. This is very important. So this is the whole idea, that this transcendental knowledge. We have something called book knowledge. He's a bookworm, book knowledge. Okay, you get a book, How to Fix Computers. And you have a little bit smart brain, and you look at it, and you take down a computer and put it back together. Okay, you learn. That's book knowledge. But book knowledge will not get you out of birth and death. So the transcendental knowledge, it's coming from consciousness. It's a very important point. Transcendental knowledge is not carried by words, but by consciousness. Thus, Vyasadeva... Now, here's the interesting point. I said knowledge Knowledge is conveyed by consciousness, not by words, right? Yes. So now if you're a little smart, you'll say, well, wait a minute. Vyasadeva wrote books. He compiled all the Vedas. He wrote words. He wrote books. He wrote Vedanta Sutra. He wrote Bhagavatam. So? You're defeated. No. What did he do after that? He initiated disciples. The very compiler of the knowledge who wrote all the Vedic knowledge, Vyasadeva, compiled it, and then he wrote Vedanta Sutra and Bhagavatam. Then he got some teachers. He divided the Vedas into four, and then he had four leading students. So he trained them in the Vedic knowledge. Why? Because knowledge is conveyed through consciousness. He could have said, okay, here you guys, here's the Vedas, 3,000 rupees, take it with you. So he who wrote the book said, my book is not enough. There's sometimes advocates that say, everything's in Prabhupada's books. It is, it's a fact, everything's in Prabhupada's books. But you have to surrender to a conscious teacher to get that knowledge that Prabhupada wants to give. Everything was in Bhakti Siddhanta's books. And Prabhupada read them. But he also surrendered to Bhakti Siddhanta and received that knowledge through conscious submission and service and reception and eagerness. Reception, eagerness, and submission. Thus, Vyasadeva accepted the role of a guru or a teacher to import the highest knowledge, devotion to Krishna. The import of his written works to his disciples. So this is the point. But he himself, he's teaching this point that knowledge comes through consciousness, submission. We receive his knowledge not by words. Then he not only wrote it, but then he did it. He's taught students and they submitted. And then his disciples in turn imparted that knowledge through disciplic succession. And this knowledge has been transmitted and given by Srila Prabhupada. So we worship the spiritual master on this day because he represents Vyasadeva. By the grace of our Gurudev and the predecessors, spiritual masters will be pleased, and that our worship will go from Guru up to all the Gurus in line to Vyasadeva, and then he will bless us. And this is the last thing. What is the speciality of Vyasa Puja festival? Because we have so many festivals or utsavas. There are four elements of every festival has four elements in it. Janmashtami festival, Nrisimha Chaturthi festival, Gaurapranim festival, Vyasa Puja festival. These are all utsavas or festivals. And they all have some commonality. Four ingredients or four elements. What are they? The sequence is Brat, Puja, Mahatmyam, and Bhojan. We fast, we glorify the activities and teachings of the Guru, we offer him an opulent feast, which then the assembled devotees relish the remnants. So all Vaishnava festivals, they follow the same pattern. So what is the difference between Vyasa Puja and all these other utsavs or festivals that many of you have attended? Because this, the worship of Vyasadeva, which is generally done in Vyasa Purnima, Guru Purnima, or in some traditions on the birthday of the Guru. There are so many festivals, Janmashtami, the Lakshmi Puja, and Ganesha Puja, and so many demigods and gods and Shaktis and Radharani's appearance day, and very, very important, absolutely essential. And if you don't observe them, then tapurat. But the worship of Guru, Vyasa Puja, is the most important festival because Sri Guru deserves our deepest gratitude because he's giving us the absolute truth. He's the true representative of Srila Vyasadeva. Out of his selfless love, Sri Guru takes the trouble to deliver Vyasa's message of surrender. What is Vyasa's message? Vyasa's message is surrender to and service to Radha and Krishna. And he delivers it in a form and language which we can understand. And he acts as a perfect example of how to live by that message. The message of Godhead, as Prabhupada would say. The message of Godhead. He takes so much trouble. And as Prabhupada said, I would listen to my guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, but I really didn't understand much of what he was saying. Read the Harmonist articles, or read any articles by Bhakti Siddhanta, and try to figure out what it says. And then if you know English, pick up Bhagavatam and then read Prabhupada's purports. You can understand them. They're quite understandable. And surprisingly enough, at least we could understand them. I've met younger people nowadays, they say, we can't understand Prabhupada's purports, but we can understand your classes. So it, Krishna adjusts. I mean, it's not something better or worse. It's not like this. Krishna is adjusting the speaker according to the audience. And in 1920s, when Prabhupada was here, I mean, and with his guru, then the audience could digest that language of Bhakti Santa Saraswati and make something of it. And then when Prabhupada, in the 70s, then we could digest something of Prabhupada's language. Now in the 21st century, the new generation can understand something of Prabhupada's books when amplified or explained by his followers, his disciples, grand disciples, etc. So it's all adjusted, but the common center is Vyasa's message, the message of Godhead, coming with this language or that language or this language through this medium or that medium. And that's the beauty. You see, if you go on this desiretree.com, and they have so many sannyasis there, iskandesiretree.com, they're all lecturing. And everyone has a different flavor. Some people like one flavor, some people like another flavor. It's the same message of Godhead. It's the same Bhagavat Tattva. Because all the sannyasis and gurus of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, they're all in parampara. And they're all connected. And they're all being blessed by Bhakti Devi, by Radharani. So they're speaking as Saraswati dictates. Some are a little more sober, some are a little funny, some like stories more like this. I listen to different sannyasis and I say, oh, that's so interesting, you know, very interesting. Because Bhagavan, you see the jivas have such different capacities and different abilities. So therefore, this is the most important day because this is the day of our Savior. I mean, how do we know anything about Sringadeva? At least we Western, of course, you're all, you know, most of us are here Indian, but we few Western folks here in the audience, ladies and gentlemen, devotees, we didn't know, without Prabhupada, we met Prabhupada and some guru, and then we found out about everything else, the Sringadeva and Krishna, and oh, there's so many Indian Krishna you're supposed to worship today. It's Janmashtami. Of course, you grow up in that culture, it's different. So for us, the Western people, it's much easier to know, understand that, yes, Guru Kripahi Kevalam. You have the phrase in Hindi, Guru Kripahi Kevalam, but we have the realization of the phrase. Because we don't know. In the Sringadeva, yeah, my grandmother, she told me I have to fast, and we stay up in the Sringadeva. You know all these things. And so everything becomes equalized. Oh, this festival, that festival, okay, Guru Puja, this, that, there's, you know, another puja, another worship. Guru and the Sringa Ganesh, Ganesh Chaturthi, this, that, birthday of Ganesh. They're all kind of relativized and homogenized into the same level, which is unfortunate. So now with these ideas, and if you think of it individually, that, okay, you grew up, you may be pious Hindus, or you are, rather, and that's your good credit and your good karmas, and you grew up in this Melu of Hindu Dharma and observing all these festivals, which is quite proper and quite human and cultured and is beneficial. But what did it do for you? It got you some punya and some sukriti and made you feel good and got some good feasts here and there. Had a few good feasts on Ganesh Chaturthi and whatever, Janmashtami feasts. Mom makes a lot of good things on Janmashtami, and all I know is we eat all these good preps on Janmashtami at 12 o'clock and whatever. But then, if all of that ends up at the lotus feet of Guru, Guru Padashraya, there your perfection begins. And then you enter the land of not where there's an occasional festival of holy or, oh, now it's Ganesh Puja, almost every other month or every month or so there's some Hindu dharmic religious festival. A time to fast, a time to feast, a time to get together, a time for brat, a time for mahatmyam, a time for puja, a time for bhojan. Another festival. Oh, here we go again. Oh, mommy, like you hear little kids say, oh, mommy, we have to fast again? The little kids are always, oh, mommy, another fast day. Yes. Fasting. In the West, they write all these articles. Fasting is good for health. Try a half-day fast. Try going one day without food. It's very good for your waistline. They introduced, you must have heard in the West, they have, give your system a rest for 12 hours. In India, it's a way of life, fasting and feasting. So this is the glorious day of Vyasa Puja, when we should understand that, as the point I was making is we have these occasional festivals, Janmashtami, Ganesh Chaturthi, etc. And the what those, if we observe those very nicely and really fast and really observe them nicely, we'll get lots of sukriti and blessings from God and demigods. And eventually we'll be directed to the lotus feet of Guru. And when we meet Guru and we worship him with receptivity and eagerness and sincerity and submission, then we will become self-realized. We'll realize our siddhideya. We'll realize the true identity of our individual nature. And then we'll enter the spiritual world where there's a festival every day. There's an utsav every day. We say every day is a festival in the spiritual world. Brahma is telling that because he had a peek. He peeked into the spiritual world and he saw the scene. He said, these guys are dancing all the time. They're always playing flute and they're just dancing. That's all they're doing, feasting. And no fasting. They're only feasting and dancing. This is Krishna. So there's a nice purport where Prabhupada is talking about this from the Bhagavatam. This is eight, about the soul. It's a very interesting point I wanted to close on. Because ultimately the guru is to bring us to the point of realizing our spiritual body. This is an eighth canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 14. Verse 47 and 48. Yat seva yagner iva vruja rodanam kumam vijayan malamatmanas tama vajeta varnam nijamesha sovayo buyat saisha paramogur guru. This is King Satyavrata. These are his prayers. He's the one that had the Leela with Matsya. Matsya avatar came small. But he says in this word, Yat seva yagner iva rudarodhanam. One who wants to be free of material entanglement should take to the service of Krishna and give up the contamination of ignorance involving pious and impious activities. Thus one regains his original identity, just as a block of gold or silver sheds all dirt and becomes purified when treated by fire. May that inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, become our spiritual master. For he is the original spiritual master of all other spiritual masters. So the Adi Guru is Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So he's using the analogy, Vajeta Varnam Nijam Esha Voya. So Varna means original identity. Nija means one's own. The analogy is if you take gold or silver comes from the ground, from the mine, and it's full of all kinds of dirt and contamination and whatnot. It's not purified. And then they take the gold and they melt it. It's called smelting. They smelt the gold, and when they melt it, as when you melt butter, all this scum or this junk comes floating on the surface of this liquid gold or liquid silver. And it's like black and dirt, and they scoop that off, and then they throw it. Then they let the gold get cooled down and become solid. And then they melt it again. And that's how you get the different purities of gold, the more they melt it down. 18 carat, 24 carat, whatever, 28, however it goes. And each time they melt it down and they scoop it, it becomes more and more bright. And in some Bengali, poetry in Bengal by the Chandidas, he says that Radharani's complexion is like gold that's been melted, smelted 1 lakh of times. 100,000 times they've boiled gold and then scooped off all the stuff. So he's saying that this soul, the varnam, varnam means color, varnam means category. Here he's saying, Prabhupada's translating varnam as the original identity. So he comments, and this is from Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary, 8th canto. The word varnam, which is in the verse, Nijam Varnam, your own Varnam. The word Varnam refers to the luster. Luster means the effulgence. Luster, the jyoti, the luster. The luster of one's original identity. The original luster of gold or silver is brilliant. Similarly, the original luster of the living entity, who is part of the Satchit Ananda Vigraha, is the luster of Anand, or pleasure. Ananda Maya Vyasat. Every living entity has the right to become Ananda Maya, joyful, because he is a part of the Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Vigraha, we are part and parcel of Krishna. And his form is eternality, unlimited joy and bliss, and full knowledge, Satchit Ananda. Why should the living being be put into tribulation because of dirty contamination by the material modes of nature? The living entity should become purified and regain his sarup, his original identity. This can be done only by devotional service. Therefore, one should adopt the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described here as Guror Guru, the spiritual master of all other spiritual masters. So Prabhupada is talking here about the sarup. This varnam nijam, the sarup, and he says that the sarup is golden, tapta kanchana gaurangi. This is the culmination of bhakti gyan leads to that, the understanding of what is my identity, what is my individual spiritual identity. And this is the conscious communion that comes from the heart of the guru and ascended masters. This is knowledge. The ultimate knowledge is the knowledge of my identity, of my sarup, and that we all have a golden form. Even that analogy is used, golden. Because the sarup is a golden, like golden personality. When you read about all the Sakhi Mandris, they're bluish gold, whitish gold, yellowish gold, or some type of gold. Golden. We don't read about silver Mandris. Sometimes you read some description of coward boys, they're reddish, green like grass. One was green like grass. So people think that one they look like grass. But it's actually they're all golden color with like shade like that. Except Krishna, of course, that's his Sringar Prem, gives that dark. But Radharani, because all the servants of the Lord, you see Balaram. Balaram's the servant of the Lord. He's whitish gold. Like cloud, they say. So some shade of white. This is the purified in the human form. Whereas peacocks are like peacocks. Spiritual peacocks look like peacocks. If you look at all the Sakhi Mandris, about their varnam, it's gold like a champak flower, white gold like lightning, whitish gold, this gold, all this. But now it's black. We see where it's blackness, darkness, ignorance all around. So this is the ultimate knowledge that Guru gives. When one surrenders to the consciousness, receives that conscious mercy from the Guru, then the Swarupa is revealed. It doesn't depend on time and place. When Prabhupada was leaving this world, Bhakti True had a conversation. Bhakti True Swami said, Srila Prabhupada is very on the point. He said, if you leave and you don't reveal our sarups, because generally at some point the Guru reveals his sarup, then how will we know what our eternal identity is? I said, what's the problem? Here or there. When you're ready, I'll reveal from there. So that's a little bit esoteric. It's not, you can say, the general standard in a lot of Gaudiya Sampradayas, but that's how Prabhupada played it. That's what he said. And if we doubt that, and then that means we've broken the conscious connection with the Guru. And then it says, what you implement instead of that is simply a mechanical formula or mechanical arrangement. Living Guru, living disciple, only this way. And there's no other way. Then that defeats the whole point of what I'm saying about the transmission of knowledge. Krishna, it's the opposite of, some people say that, oh, you only can get sarup directly from Guru. But that's not what Krishna is saying. That's like saying you can only get knowledge by studying Bhagavad Gita, the direct words. But Krishna himself is saying it's pranipatena, it's by through consciousness. And the whole body of Vedic knowledge is all descent of mercy. Revelation, Rajavijaya Rajaguyam. Bhakti is a very subtle thing. Prabhupada said it's simple for the simple and difficult for the crooked. Just surrender, find a proper authority or guru which one can surrender to. And then serve. And then see what happens. So this is the end of our presentation of Vyasa Puja.